The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network studios.
Off we go into NFL draft week, the day after The Last Dance. We actually have things to talk about in the world of sports. Welcome on in. Kent Summers will join us via Skype at 10:20 this morning on the NFL draft for the Cardinals. And what does he expect, this whole remote deal? I would think that general managers, from my understanding today, general managers and coaches are having a rehearsal with ESPN and NFL Network on how to do their technology. This has got to be a hacker's dream. Like, there's got to be some dudes out there saying, wouldn't it be awesome if we, like, if elections can be messed with, as some people say, with Russia and Trump, then I would think that there's some really smart dudes that are sitting in basements saying, man, it would be fun to know what the Carolina Panthers are talking about a deal with the Chicago Bears about, and we'll just put it out there. To think that there's nobody that can figure out a way to hack in here in 2020, come on! So I'm really looking forward to the draft this week. The hype has not been too much. The Wonderlic score story with Tua, I mean, that stuff gets out every year. There's something about Wonderlic scores. And the NFL hates Wonderlic scores getting out. It's out. We're going to talk about the Cardinals with Kent and the draft stuff. Last Dance last night was, oh man, so good. So good. And so we have that to get to as well. Before we get into the start of the show, so Jared, if you've got those photos of Tex, just tell me. But Tex Earnhardt passed away. And that one hit me pretty hard. I was Tex Earnhardt's spokesperson for 8 years. And I met Tex through my good friend Steve Airey back in 1995. And Tex was the iconic automotive, that ain't no bull voice of automotive for years. And the day that I got let go from KTAR, they told me in their office, the day of my 10-year anniversary, you've been here too long, you've been too loyal, you make too much money, we're letting you go. That was the exact quote. And so I walked out, and they let a bunch of us go that day. They let Al McCoy go, and Al was sitting out in the lobby, and he's like, well, at least they had the courtesy to bring you in to talk to you about it. True story. They let Bill Haywood go. They let lots of people go that day. And I walk out to my car, and my phone rings, and it's Jerry Colangelo. And Jerry says, condolences. And I talked to Jerry for a couple of minutes. He said, go underwater, disappear for air, come up, and you'll see things more clearly. You're going to be just fine. I call Tex Earnhardt from the parking lot where I just was let go like 5 minutes, 10 minutes earlier. And I said, per our agreement, I'm going to return the vehicles that my wife and I are driving tomorrow. And he said, what are you talking about? And I said, Tex, I was just let go. And he said, what? And I said, yeah, they had a purge and the station sold. And they said, too long, too loyal, too much money. And he says, hang on. So he puts me on hold. And he comes back about, I don't know, a minute and a half, 2 minutes later. And he says, very sternly to me, he says, you go home and you hug that wife and kids, your wife and kids, and you don't worry about those vehicles. And I just canceled all my advertising on KTAR. And that's what Tex was. And we stayed in touch. When I went to Channel 3, it got right down to the end where I said, I need to be Tex Earnhardt's spokesperson. And Channel 3 said, no, you cannot be a spokesperson and be on the air. And it was almost me walking out of the building. And I talked to Tex. He's like, you should go do the TV thing. And it was fine. We stayed close 2 years ago. We had a lunch. He wanted to know how this was going. He wanted to know how I was doing. He wanted to know how my family was doing. It was very Tex Earnhardt. So that's an iconic figure here in Arizona. And he passed away yesterday. And he meant an awful lot, an awful, awful lot to me. Our opening comments are brought to you by Sagicor Now. Protect what matters most. And that is with life insurance. So Peace Assured is something I want to talk to you about today. Peace Assured. So when I watch TV on the weekends, they usually have in their first few stories a car wash being held for somebody because that somebody cannot afford a funeral. I've actually had a couple of friends who lost loved ones unexpectedly that did not have their funerals planned for. And it's something where you're like, this is really morbid. Well, no, it's not. You don't want to burden people after you're not here. So go to Sagicor Now and check into Peace Assured. That's all I'm going to tell you. Just go check into this program. It makes an awful lot of sense. That's at Sagicor Now. We appreciate Sagicor and their support. Kent Summers here. in about 9 minutes. Eric joins us. How was your weekend?
Wasn't bad. Nice to see you. How was yours?
I golfed. I watched Last Dance last night. I watched it. I took it in. I took it all in. When this was playing, I was just, I was thinking about the Suns, you know, but I think the Suns might have taken this music from the Bulls, right? Right? I mean, did that happen?
That was a long time ago.
Not totally sure the timeline on that.
But when the Suns played this, it felt like kind of a rip on the, you know, the Bulls were doing their thing. So, I don't know. Last night was, did you watch?
I saw the first part. I didn't see the second one yet. It's on the DVR. I thought it was very good. It wasn't like the greatest thing ESPN has ever done, but I thought it was very good.
Wow. You didn't like it?
I didn't say that. You weren't listening again. I said I thought it was very good, but I didn't think it's the greatest thing ESPN has done. But I've only watched one of the 10 hours, so I'm sure it's going to get juicier and there's going to be more profanity and cocaine stories about all the Bulls that were doing it in the 80s, along probably with every other, I don't know, NBA player, because that was kind of the thing to do back then, I guess. So,
were you a Bulls fan?
No.
Was it because of the hatred with the Suns Bulls, or was it just Michael wasn't your thing?
Michael really wasn't my thing. And then 93, just kind of like, that's like even watching it last night, I was excited to watch it. But then I was like, oh, man, it's just you just take the knife and just twist it again. 30 years later.
Really?
03, 13, 20, almost 30 years later.
You're still hanging on to that?
Well, clearly.
I mean, Brad, Paxton hit the shot.
What town are we in? We're in Phoenix. What is Phoenix, Brad?
Mostly Chicagoan.
Is Phoenix a Cardinals town? No.
No.
Is Phoenix a Diamondbacks town? No. Is Phoenix a Coyotes town? No. Phoenix is a Suns town. It's been how many days, hours, minutes since the last playoff berth?
I know. But, well, it's been a long time.
But you would agree with me. Phoenix is a Suns town.
Well, do you think Yankee fans get butthurt when they see Luis Gonzalez hit one off of Mariano Rivera?
Of course not.
No. So,
but it's a little different when you've never won an NBA title as compared to what the 58,000 World Series that the Yankees have won.
See, I thought for you to say it was okay.
I didn't say it was okay. I said it was very good. It's just not the greatest thing that ESPN has ever done, in my opinion.
Not the greatest thing. No. Is it better than OJ in America?
So far, no.
Wow.
It's such a small sample size for me. We need to have this conversation in June when airing 10 of 10 plays or whatever. And I was under the assumption that it was every night leading up to the draft. Whoops, yeah. My bad.
No, I could have sat there last night and watched. I might have found myself drifting a little bit in episode two, just a little bit at times. But episode one was so well done, in my opinion. Like, the fact that someone was given the access with a camera back in 1997 to, hey, you just might want to follow these guys around. And so some of the stuff they've come up with, here you and I are in the art of storytelling here in 2020. And we know it's all about access. It's all about access. And I think Steve Kerr is the one that put it best. We're going to talk about this further at 10:35 after Kent. But I think Steve Kerr is the one that put it best, that back then, because there was no social media, there was almost a charm and a naivety about what it was like, larger than life figure, because you didn't have access to them 24/7, 365. You didn't have people that sat in basements and hated on people for the sake of doing it. You didn't have people taking selfies of them out at lunch or dinner. You know, you didn't have any of that stuff. And the moment where the journalist over in, where was it? Were they in London?
Paris.
In Paris. And the guy tried to get an autograph from him and Jordan shooed him away, or the PR guy did. That was classic. That was great.
I knew, Brad, the relationship between Jerry Reinsdorf and Michael Jordan was terse, but seeing the things in episode one where he's basically just clowning on the guy in public in front
Jerry
of the
Krause.
Team.
Jerry Krause.
Jerry Krause.
Yeah.
Jerry Reinsdorf.
Reinsdorf's the owner. Krause was the general manager, and Krause was clowned on the whole, like, it was brutal on him.
Made fun of his height, made fun of his weight, all kinds of things. But when you're Michael Jordan, you can do that. So,
well, and Scottie Pippen, we'll get into this a little bit further, but Scottie Pippen's contract was just a tragedy, and people forget, bring it back to the Suns. People forget that when Charles was traded from here, there was a time where the Suns, where Jerry did talk to the Bulls about Scottie Pippen. People forget about that. But I think Michael Finley's name was part of that deal, and the Suns were going to be like, and Wesley Person's name was part of it. And there was no way at that time when they were going to do a rebuild when Cotton was here. And that was it was like, I saw a lot of Suns things. When Jerry put Cotton in charge to coach, and then said Ainge is going to be the coach at the end of the season. And that was the year the Suns started out 0-13. That's the year I lived in a van and looked like this, except I had hair on top of my head. And the players started going around Cotton to Danny after like five games saying, what is my role going to be next year? When I heard the Jerry Krause trying to get Tim Floyd deal, and it was right at the same time, and knowing that Jerry Colangelo and Jerry Reinsdorf are very, very close. Very, very close. And, you know, could Pippen have come here? There's no way in my world that Jerry gets Pippen to come here. So Pippen goes to Houston. And so there was just a lot there last night. I had fans saying I'd rather see something on Steve Nash than Michael Jordan. Different player. Just in different personality all the way through. In episode two, when Jordan scores 63 and he goes golfing with Ainge the day before, and Ainge talks about it, and Jordan finishes playing golf, and Ainge says, yeah, I took some money off Mike that day. Now, think about this, Eric. It's Celtics Bulls. And Ainge is saying, yeah, we went golfing the day before the game. And Jordan said to him when they left, he's like, hey, tell Dennis Johnson I got something for him tomorrow night. And he scores 63 on him. Like, I'm watching that like, this is so good. So good. Who do you have coming up today on your 2020 vision?
Coming up at 10:50, we're going to catch up with Marcus Libben at Pinnacle High School. Two-sport athlete, really good basketball player. And next year, he will be going to Columbia to play football in the Ivy League.
That sounds good. That comes up as we honor the class of 2020 high school seniors. Kent Summers joins us next on All Things Around the NFL Draft. I'm Brad Sismat. All right, the draft is Thursday. All of us are working remotely. Arizona Republic columnist, AZ Central Sports, Kent Summers is with us now. Of course, he has covered the Cardinals for many, many years, and you've never seen anything, I'm sure, quite like this, just when you think you've seen it all. A draft being done remotely. So how do you, other than Zoom, how do you prepare for something like this?
Yeah, I'm curious how it's going to work Thursday, Friday, and Saturday selfishly for the media covering it. It's a whole new world. I didn't even know what Zoom was, you know, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. And now I'm not an expert, but I can, it's pretty easy to navigate your way around. I don't know. It's fascinating to me to see these clips of Cliff Kingsbury from his house, of Steve Keim working from his kitchen counter. You know, a couple of coaches in the league, Andy Reid for one's going to be in his basement of his house. It's different. And I've kind of enjoyed at least the last week or two. You haven't heard any whining from NFL folks. I think Roger Goodell's edict to, hey, you know, shut up. This is the way it's going to be. I think it works. So that part of it's kind of nice.
Well, it's funny in the Cardinals case, Steve's draft record obviously has not been great. There's been the hits and misses like any general manager, but he's had a run of times that have been pretty lean. Kyler Murray comes along. Last year's draft had some hits like most of them do. Then he goes out and gets DeAndre Hopkins. So then there's this whole, well, that guy can trade. He can go get Chandler Jones, and he can go get Kenyon Drake, and he can go get DeAndre Hopkins. But what's he going to do at number 8 so that we're not sitting here with someone saying, what did you guys think here? What exactly? So give me your view on Keim in this offseason and coming into this draft where Steve is? Because last year was dead man walking, didn't happen, and now all of a sudden he's a brilliant for the Hopkins deal.
Yeah, it's been curious to me since last year that Michael Bidwell has had a dramatic, different opinion of Steve Keim than a lot of the rest of us and the job he's done for the last several years. I never thought Steve Keim was on shaky footing with Michael. His job was very safe. I think part of that is they are friends. Part of that is that Michael was right there with every decision that was made, from, you know, free agency to draft, all those drafts he's very active in. So yeah, a couple years ago, I would have not given you great odds that maybe Steve Keim would be conducting the 2020 draft. But he went last year and established some credibility. I didn't think it was a great move to go out and get Kyler Murray. I thought they should have kept Josh Rosen and gone with a defensive player. He's proven me wrong. I think that's a good move, but clearly he's got to draft better. Last year's class appears to be better with not only Kyler Murray, but a Byron Murphy come in, looks like to be a future starter, but he needs to stack some of those classes together. The classes of 16, 17, and 18, he just missed far too much, three consecutive years, and it really depleted the roster of talent. I still think at number eight, I think Steve Keim's a scout at heart, and he doesn't want to go into the draft with this few of picks. I wouldn't be surprised if he's making calls and really ascertaining. He's like, okay, where can I drop down to get the extra picks that I want? And I think that's a scenario that could play out Thursday evening.
We're talking with Kent Summers, AZ Central sports columnist, with the draft coming up on Thursday night and Friday and Saturday as well. You mentioned it earlier that he is a scout at heart. And to that end, he likes to go get the Andy Isabellas of the world. He likes to go find the guys that nobody else is looking at, David Johnson. We can go through a bunch of guys. This year, he's not been able to do that we can really tell over the last 2 months. And so does he go traditional? To your point, I think trading down at eight, if there's another quarterback, if there's a quarterback sitting there at eight, they've got to trade out. Just in my view, they've got to trade out at that point. But does he take risks this year, or does he go with the known brands, known commodities?
I don't think he can. It depends on the position. I think if it's a position of strength, then I think you could take some risk. If the risk is backed by, say, the opinion of offensive line coach Sean Coogler, who says, hey, I really like this guy, I think Coogler has a lot of credibility, not only what he's done throughout the league, his work in college, he has that background. But what he did last year with that group, I mean, it was much more productive than any of us thought it would be. So if Coogler tells Keim, hey, you know, this is worth the risk, then I would tend to believe him there. But otherwise, I think they should go with more of the sure thing. This roster isn't in a place where they can say, hey, let's take a flyer on this guy, or we've got a scout who really likes this guy. Nobody else particularly does. But I don't think you'll see that happen in the first part of the draft. Again, I'm not sure when or where they fell in love with Andy Isabella. My hunch is that was probably happened in the fall and not so much in February or March. So, you know, hopefully they can avoid that kind of what appears to be a mistake.
A couple other questions. I'll let you go. I appreciate your time as always. The Hopkins trade, if you're just talking Arizona sports in general, we haven't seen him take a snap yet, so we can't say greatest trade in the history. But on the surface, where would you put Hopkins coming to Arizona in regards to other moves by other teams in the Valley? Diamondbacks, Suns, Coyotes, they've all had big deals come down. But to have a guy like this who supposedly is that highly regarded, where would you put this move?
I'd have to put it right at the top. I mean, I know the Coyotes made a move for a couple of guys, but they hadn't produced at a high level in a year or two for whatever reason. Kessel, you know, for one, they were coming off injuries. I think the Diamondbacks made some good moves, but those deals seem far more equitable. They gave up, you know, some talent to get that talent.
Yeah.
You know, but for – and the thing with the David Johnson thing, it's not just the talent that the Cardinals received. It's that they got rid of that contract.
Yeah.
They got out from under $10 million guaranteed. I never thought that would happen. That's what makes the trade to me and almost everybody else seem so one-sided. I mean, you're getting a receiver who's produced, who's been, you know, you could, big argument that he's been the league's best receiver the last 4 or 5 years. And certainly he's in the top three of that conversation. Now, we'll see. I think this trade will continue to play out and be evaluated because I think they've made some promises to DeAndre Hopkins about, okay, we're going to address your contract. What's that going to look like? Because we've seen the Cardinals, you know, get hurt by some of these contract extensions. David Johnson, number one, you know, what will they give Hopkins long-term and will he earn that?
Yeah. Patrick Peterson, Tyrann Mathieu. I mean, I remember when they were doing contracts right and left, and a lot of it felt PR based rather than what was going on the field.
And Brad, it was contracts before they had to give them.
Yes.
You know, it was David Johnson a year or two before they had to pay him. It was Tyrann Mathieu before he had ever started to run again from that second ACL surgery. You know, it was addressing, the players loved it because it was addressing contracts that had 2 or 3 more years left to run.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, and then Hopkins is the same thing. He signed for 3 more seasons. So, you know, and that's why one of the reasons the Texans traded him, they're like, hey, you know, we've addressed your contract. You know, you've got this much left on it. We're not in a big rush to do it again. And the Cardinals stepped up and said, hey, we'll do it.
Let me throw a couple other questions at you. One is NFL and one is on the college. And the NFL end is, you've covered this league a long time. You know the workings of the NFL inside and out. Tom Brady being married to Bruce Arians, a guy that you've covered, how do you think that's going to go?
Oh, I think it's going to go well. I have no doubt that those two will get along because Bruce Arians loves the quarterback he's with. He, you know, his starting quarterback. He, if you remember back when he took the Cardinals job that first year, 2013, he loved Drew Stanton for a month. And what Drew, it was sincere. Drew Stanton's going to be our starter. And then Carson Palmer became available. And I think Steve Keim sort of said, hey, you know, We can get this guy, you know, he's really good. And then it was like, I love Carson Palmer, you know, and it's, he definitely loves the quarterback he's with. And I think it'll be a breath of fresh air for Tom Brady after 20 years with Bill Belichick. And, you know, I from reading, I mean, I'm not close to that situation, but reading, I think it just got old of never getting an acknowledgement that, hey, you know, you're a great player. He'll get plenty of that from Bruce. And, you know, and Bruce, as his quarterbacks have always said, Bruce will MF the backup and love Tom up. So, and that's the way it'll go. And somebody close to the situation told me, don't underestimate the impact of Byron Leftwich too, as he's the offensive coordinator there. And that's a nice buffer for between Bruce and the quarterback room.
Yeah, and Byron now has some seasoning under him. You know, here he was put into that space, and he had his mistakes, in my opinion. He was trying to learn a little bit on the job while I was here and transition too. What is your view on a calmness end of Arizona State, U of A, and what is going on with this pandemic and the future of college sports in our state?
It's got to be so challenging for people in those offices, you know, ADs like Ray Anderson, because, you know, as you know, Brad, those colleges more than the NFL need people in the stands. They need the ticket revenue, especially in the Pac-12, where you don't have the huge media contracts that you have somewhere else. And so if this drags into the football season and you're faced with that on top of the financial hits you've already taken, you know, and then you've got NCAA asking, hey, you know, these kids who missed out on their final spring seasons or whatever, you can bring them back on scholarship. Well, that's nice to say, but where's the money come from?
Right.
That's a lot of things coming together that you've got to work out. I think sometimes, though, you've got to, if you're in those positions, you've got to plan for the worst and hope for the best. But I also think you can get too far ahead of yourself because we've learned through this, you know, what we think we know now changes in a week or changes in 2 weeks. So it's I imagine it's the most challenging thing they've ever gone through in their, you know, in their present jobs.
We had Greg Byrne on this last week, Bama AD, and he was very direct saying, yep, we may plan our football season next spring. And the idea of of college football being played in the spring. Now it's the SEC. I get it. I understand that. But
we'll finally have a spring pro league.
right. That won't fold, but we would hope, right? That's good. But to have the SEC, the Pac-12 to be looking around at this right now and saying, hey, we have to get our football season on track here in August. I just don't see it as we're sitting here in April. But I'm no doctor. It's just that it doesn't, to your point, though, things change in a week's time. I just don't see this changing in very short future.
It's so hard to imagine that now when we're barely going to the grocery store, and when we do, we're wearing a mask and gloves.
Yep.
It's hard to imagine that in late August, 50,000 people are going to be at Sun Devil Stadium, shoulder to shoulder, watching a game. So much has to happen to me from what I read, you know, from being able to test widespread to, you know, having a vaccine for this. That those two things seem to have to be in place for mass gatherings to happen again.
Yeah. Good stuff. Stay well. We're talking off the air. Kent had a great week last week on personal level with some births and engagements. And so it sounds like life is good for you, even in a pandemic. Appreciate the visit as always.
Thanks, Brad.
There's Kent Summers with us at AZ Central. You can read all of his content over at AZ Central Sports. And the draft, of course, is this week. On the other side, we're going to get back to Last Dance because there's a lot I want to get to from last night. And Eric has his 2020 vision that comes up too. If you know of a barber, okay, I'm follically challenged to begin with, and I'm sitting here and I just look in the screen like, wow, that is something. It's everywhere. All right, we're back with more after this time out. So we have some big breaking news that involves one of our friends, Michael Fabiano. Michael Fabiano has been coming on the show, Eric. How long have we had Fabs? Six years?
2013, I believe, was the first time we had Fabiano on.
Did you know him initially? How did that one, was that me reaching out to him? I don't even really remember how it came to be.
No, you said, hey, we should start doing fantasy football because it's going to be a big thing. And per usual, I was like, that's a horrible idea. I have no idea who this person is, but sure, we'll get him on. And well, you know, 7 years later, we're still doing it. So that's why you're the boss and I'm not.
So Fabiano signed a deal with Sirius today. He's staying at the NFL Network, which I think is important, but he's going to do a show on Sirius from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. in the East, which is great for us because I was very worried that it was going to be like 10 a.m. Pacific, and we'd never see him again. So that's really good news, I think, for Michael. And there's really nobody better than him, right?
He's a Hall of Famer. I mean, he's the best that I know of. But he's also the only one that I really communicate with. So
when I put him on the air, it's like, if I don't have my A game in fantasy, I'm screwed. So, and a lot of times I don't have my A game in fantasy because I played in leagues. I'm not stupid. Crazy. I shouldn't call Michael stupid, but any guy who's in five fantasy leagues at the same time, he's sadistic. Okay. That's the better word to use.
That's his passion.
No, that is. That'd be like me being on five radio stations or doing five different shows. And I wouldn't go that far. I'm fine doing two. You did not see, I want to get back to Last Dance for a minute and we'll take a break. You did not see the second part. So I'm going to go through this. The second part, I like the first episode better than I like the second episode better because it had the old grainy North Carolina footage. It had him against Patrick Ewing in Georgetown. It went back in a space where they laid out the groundwork. The pounding and unmerciful crushing of Jerry Krause was set very early in that in episode one. I think for episode two, because you're going to go back and watch it, right? You put it on DVR?
Tonight. Yeah, I'll get to it tonight. Honestly, one of the things, Brad, I like real quick, and I'll let you finish your rant. I loved in the first episode the note that he wrote his mom from college that said, please send stamps.
Yes.
Because he was just a college kid. It's hard to believe. Michael Jordan was just a normal college kid at one time. He needed money and he needed stamps.
when he walked into the hotel room in Peoria, Illinois, and there were women, cocaine, and weed, and he turned around and he walked out. And the old footage of the Bulls, like, there was nobody at those Bulls games. Nobody was at those Bulls games. And so, and then just the there was that, and then the constant needling of Krause to me. And I liked Reinsdorf. Reinsdorf came across as a typical owner. You know, he knew he had some issues. Phil Jackson in episode two, I really liked his approach. They didn't really define Phil Jackson yet. Next week, episode three is on Rodman. Episode four is on Phil Jackson. Okay.
Nice.
And I always loved Rodman. Rodman was that space that you have to have on any sports team. You have to have some grit. You have to have some guys. The Diamondbacks won the World Series with a gritty guy named Mark Grace, a gritty guy named Greg Colburn, a gritty guy on the mound, Randy Johnson, a kind of a, you know, out there guy in Curt Schilling in some respects. So there were some guys that just rubbed people differently. And Rodman was that. I loved Rodman as a player. A lot of people hated him. I absolutely loved him as a player. It's like Ron Artest. Give me guys like that. Give me a Rodman or a Ron Artest or a Draymond Green, and I'm going to win. I have to have those guys. So it's very good stuff. All right, on the other side, Eric has his 2020 vision. Stay with us for that.
Welcome back to our latest installment of 2020 Vision. Basically, we highlight a student athlete from the class of 2020 who had their sports season, their academic year, other things cut short due to the coronavirus. We're excited to have Marcus Libman. Libby is a guy that I've known for 3 years now. Amazing two-sport athlete. He jumps on via Skype. Libby, first off, where are you?
I'm at Culver's right now. Culver's by the Cardinal Stadium.
Okay. Just hanging out in the West Valley. That's cool. So I need to start by asking you, how have you been dealing with the pandemic? I've seen on social media you've been out a little bit. I know you've been doing some workouts. I've seen you on some hikes. But mentally, how are you doing through all this?
I'm doing all right. I'm still doing my schoolwork and stuff, but I get bored pretty easily.
How has it been at the house with, you know, the whole family? Has that dynamic been a little intense just because you guys are around each other so much?
A little. Not really. My mom loves it. She thinks it's a big family time thing. So we're playing games because there's five of us in the family. So we're always doing stuff.
You're pretty fortunate looking back on your prep career at Pinnacle. Two 6A state basketball championships. A 6A state football semifinal appearance as a junior. Last year, you guys made the Open 8 as a senior. Reflecting back on that, because now your Pinnacle high school career is over, what have you kind of taken away from that time now that you're moving on and going to Columbia next year to play football?
Yeah, it's crazy. I'm going to miss all the memories and all my friends for sure. And it just sucks because I couldn't really finish that end of senior year kind of vibe. But I'll definitely stay cool with the close people around me. And, just once this is over, I'm definitely gonna be hitting everybody up so I can say goodbye. It was crazy.
So you and I live relatively close to each other, and my gym is the Mountainside Fitness right there in Desert Ridge. And I tell you, honestly, Libby, dating all the way back to the fall, I'd probably see 8 to 10 Pinnacle baseball players in there working out, getting ready for their season.
Yeah.
What do you tell to those guys? I mean, those are your classmates that had their, I mean, it ended just someone flipped off a switch. What do you tell some of those guys?
They were shocked for sure. Cause I had a couple buddies that they didn't know for sure where they were going to go yet. And they're going to play their senior season and have it kind of pan out and decide. And then they couldn't. So they just had to make a decision off of before. But I don't know. I told my one buddy, I was like, what'd I say? I was just telling him how he's got to fight through it. Like, cause at least baseball's not over. You'll still be playing at the next level. So.
Right on. So in terms of, Columbia. You and I haven't talked. I know that that thing kind of came down to the wire. You had some last minute opportunities. You can't go wrong going to an Ivy League school in New York, but take us through the process of why you picked Columbia.
All right. So it came down to really to like USC or Columbia, and my grandpa always told me that he would help me in like wherever I wanted to go, like put my mind to it, and he'll help me out and go there. And when I went on my official, because I've never been to New York City before, so it was the first time I've been to, and it was just it was crazy. Just my eyes just got huge. Everything is right there by, and I loved Times Square. I love Central Park, and everything is just right there. Like Columbia is in the middle of the city, and then just the schooling too. Like once I graduate, say football doesn't work out, then I have so many opportunities and so many other things that I could do to still have a great life.
Definitely. Well, take us through some of the workouts you've been doing, just trying to stay in shape. I know you've been throwing with some guys and probably doing some cardio and things like that. Have you been lifting as well?
Yeah. So I'm a little more fortunate because our friends right down the street, they have a little gym in their garage. So I'll go out there. I'll start do some arms workout. And then usually Tuesdays, Thursdays, I go and catch with Spencer or cool. I'll go in or we go to Little Horizon area. I catch with Jake Martinelli.
Nice.
Yes. So we'll go play some catch, and then usually like Wednesdays or Fridays, I go run a hike like Pinnacle Peak or something with my mom.
Very cool. Yeah, we had Jake Martinelli on last week as one of my 2020 Vision guests. So there you talk about talented quarterback, and I don't know who's smarter between the two of you guys.
He's pretty smart.
All right, last question. I know you've got to take your little brother somewhere. What is going on at Pinnacle in terms of prom and graduation? Have both of those been squashed?
So our principal is really trying to do his best. He's such a good guy. So at first prom was like totally canceled, but not graduation yet. But then he sent out an email a couple weeks ago, and he's like, I still want prom to work. He's like, no matter where it is, we're still going to try. So and graduation is supposed to be in like late June or something. So I don't know. We'll see how this all plans out.
So I'm going to put a little bug in your ear. A couple weeks ago, I had Bruno Fina on from South Point. I know you've got a good friend that goes to school and plays football down there. Yeah. He said he is like planning their own little like separate prom with some of the football players.
Really?
You know, that might not be a bad idea. Falls through. So
my mom was talking about that because we have a pretty nice backyard. She's like, I'll just rent a DJ, put out a dance floor on the grass. So you have everybody come over. I was like, oh, yeah.
That sounds cool. Well, hey, I appreciate your time. It's always good to see you. You've always been great to me, and it's been great to get to know you over the last few years. And I know you're going to do great things at Columbia, but we'll be in touch soon. Okay, man?
All right. Sounds good. Thank you
for having me. All right, Libby. You got it. Talk to you soon.
All right. Sounds good.
That's Marcus Libman from Pinnacle High School. Amazing two-sport athlete. That is today's 2020 Vision guest.